John Phillips called Paul and I in 60, what would be the year, 66, 67, knew we were coming out to L.A. and wanted to talk about starting a festival with all free talent. And the idea that it was free talent, meaning it's not a commercial endeavor, kids are going to know that we're doing this for music's sake and for a grand party sake, was going to be the essence of the show. And I liked it a lot because I thought, take the money element away and you have something that's going to have a nice feeling about it. And we met he and Michelle Phillips, and Lou Adler, who was producing the Mamas and Papas records, and Paul and I. We met in California and talked about this festival we were going to have up in Monterey, and we started making a guest list of who we would invite, and we had a lot of fun coming up with the names of the people as we knew the real great ones were, Otis Redding and the Buffalo Springfield and all these artists that we knew were, never mind what the company says or what it's supposed to be, we felt we knew who the genuine good record makers were. And so we had this great time coming up with the perfect guest list and seeing if they would respond to doing this great show with no pay. And everybody said yes, everybody except Ravi Shankar, who insisted on getting paid. And that was the first festival. Since then, when Woodstock came shortly after that, my attitude was Woodstock is a bit of a copy of Monterey because Monterey was a huge success. In terms of spirit, it was wonderful. A weekend of, about 20 different acts. I had a great feeling about that. When I saw Woodstock, I felt, well, they're already now doing the second. It's a copy. It's the East Coast version of what we did. I always thought Monterey was the one. It was great. You had to be there. It was sensational. The spirit was fabulous. Yeah, the talent was the right group. From Hendrix to Janis Joplin was just becoming popular in Big Brother and the Holding Company then. Otis Redding closed one of the nights. The Jefferson Airplane played with their backs to the audience, looking at their light show on the rear screen. Yeah, we closed the first night. Did six tunes. And I think they used Feelin' Groovy in the movie. Well, remember earlier in the interview I was saying how Monterey was conceived as an offering, a musical offering, more than it was conceived as a commercial enterprise. In the last 20 years, we've seen very, very few things that are conceived as not commercial enterprises. The truth is that rock and roll became a multi-billion dollar business, and businessmen moved in on it. And you have to go back to that earlier era to get a little more of an innocent thing where music was the emphasis and the love of a great record was the reason for the existence of many a tune. These were not calculated financial bids to make profit, you know. They were about, let's see how great the record can be. Sure, the kids are going to buy it, and they're, you know, commerce is commerce, but somehow that was not the focus. And since then, we've seen the whole thing corporatize itself to the great loss of the spirit of what could be. So when I think of those days, I think of myself as a record maker and the thrill of just everything was the record and how wonderful it could be and the fact that the Beatles were influencing us. I guess the money was not so big as to be so intrusive. Sometimes I think, well, the next phase in music is going to be kids singing on the street who did not sign with record companies but attracted an audience because music's got to live and music lovers will continue to find it. And maybe they'll throw their dollar bills into the guitar cases on the street corners and record companies will try and sign these music makers, but they won't sign. They'll just keep making their music for this wonderful, loyal group of people who show up nightly. Sometimes I think that's the future. It's very tough to break out of the manipulation of the media. The media sends what it sends, and record companies try and calculate who to sign and what to shape and what to send out as if they know. How do you break that cycle? It's tough. Does it start with the audience? It seems somehow unrealistic that the audience will say, we're boycotting it. We're no longer going to buy this stuff, because if that's all there is, then that is all they can do. Mm-hmm. Because music's got to live, so we can't assume that music will die off because of this, but I believe it'll come from a new direction. There'll be another form of doing this.